Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, a relationship healing expert helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. Author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. You can reach me directly or schedule an appointment at DrEricaWellness.com. Conflict and emotional upset are quite common in many of our relationships, especially in our most intimate relationships with the people we claim to love the most. Often, our egos get in the way of reconciling our differences, and our emotions can flare up uncontrollably. In the early stages of conflict, counseling can certainly help, but if the conflict continues for a long time, the best solution may be mediation with a skilled mediator to negotiate and resolve differences. Today I am excited to be speaking with my colleague and friend, a Florida Supreme Court certified mediator and mediation trainer, Dr. Eleanor Robin. Her area of expertise is professional and personal relationship conflict, especially in divorce, family estrangement, the workplace, and business partnership. Dr. Eleanor teaches, writes, and speaks as a skilled practitioner and recognized expert in mediation and conflict management. With wit and wisdom, she brings her clients and students the benefit of her academic achievements, small business background, and extensive court system experience. To learn more about her work, visit EleanorRobin.com, AFriendlyDivorce.com, or MediationTrainingGroup.com. Welcome, Dr. Eleanor Robin.
Well, thank you for having me here today.
Well, let's just jump right in. Eleanor, I have so many people over the years who have considered mediation, but they aren't sure exactly what it is, what's involved, and what they might expect. So could you please explain for our listeners exactly what is mediation?
Mediation is really just assisted negotiation. So people who want to negotiate either a resolution to a conflict or they want to create some other kind of an arrangement that involves, you know, conversations between them, if those conversations are too difficult for them to have on their own, they can engage the services of a mediator who will help them create the conversation that they need. So mediation is especially useful in something like a divorce, where often not only do the parties find it hard to talk to each other, but often in a divorce, because there's legal issues involved, they don't even really know what the questions are that they have to, you know, answer.
So another question I have is, how is this different from regular counseling?
Well, there are some similarities, but in counseling, we're more interested in processing out something that has happened. And in mediation, we're really just interested in an action plan. So, for instance, if let's say that there's been an affair and people are getting divorced, they might go to counseling. Well, let's say even if they're not getting divorced, you know, they want to figure it out. If they want to figure it out, then they would go to counseling. Once they know that they're getting a divorce, then they might end up in mediation. Because counseling is much more about exploring, and people can go to counseling without knowing what the end goal or the end result is that they want. People show up at mediation, and it's important to, either know or very soon create what the end result they want is. So if people show up in mediation, sometimes we'll say to, they may come in and say, we don't know if we're going to get a divorce. And very rarely we do see couples who say that. But if they do, we tell them, okay, well, at the end of this session, you're going to have decided whether you want to move forward with a divorce or you want to go into marriage counseling. And, of course, if they want to move forward with a divorce, I can help them. If they want to go into marriage counseling, they'll find themselves a marriage counselor to work with them. And then in mediation, we're focused on the future, the action plan. So we may define that, yes, there was an exit affair, and we can define what an exit affair is, but we're not going to process out the emotions involved.
So even if someone is going through the mediation process, they may also choose to go for some counseling to work
definitely.
Out the issues.
Definitely.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The two actually work best when it's together, if in the case of a divorce, but actually in any case. Let's say that someone is estranged from their adult child, because we're talking here about baby boomers. And the most effective way might be to enter into mediation with the child, but at the same time have both the parent and the child in their own counseling, and because counseling very much would focus on, you know, the individual, whereas mediation focuses on the pair, but it also focuses on the relationship. What does this relationship need to look like? And more, what are the action steps the parent would take? What are the action steps the child would take? And what are the steps that neither one of them would take? You know, what are they willing to commit to avoiding so that they could get along better in the future?
I like the focus on action steps, because as you're talking, I am imagining that there are some couples that could just get lost in the emotion and not know how or what steps to take. So I have another question here before we continue. I'd like to know a little bit about your background and what led you to get involved with this important work that helps so many couples that are on the brink of serious problems.
Well, I had a background in small business, and at some point in my life I went back to school, and I learned about mediation while I was an adult student. And I learned about it and said, wow, that really interests me. And I was lucky enough that someone allowed me to sit in on one of the very early trainings that was held in Florida for mediators. And I knew I liked it so much, I wanted to do it, and I basically did everything I could to learn more. And for a while, I mediated all sorts of things, like mediated a lot of small claims court disputes. And at some point, I went through my own divorce, and that experience got me even more interested in divorce mediation. And this was, my own divorce wasn't mediated. That was before that. Well, in a sense, it was, because a friend helped us, and the friend, not knowing what he was doing, he's a barber actually. He really did act as a mediator, but at the time we didn't know it. We didn't know what mediation was. I know he didn't know what mediation was. But so my divorce was not formally mediated or mediated by a professional mediator, but I really do believe that this friend of ours did act very much as a mediator. And so I was interested in divorce, and I was interested in mediation. And it just was a natural outgrowth of the two. That I should, you know, start doing what I have really spent the last 20 years doing, is mediating divorces and other disputes where a relationship is involved. You know, mediators come in many, many forms. You can find mediators who will mediate insurance disputes or medical malpractice. A lot of construction disputes are mediated. But basically the work I have done has focused on relationships. So it's workplace. I've mediated many workplace disputes. again, the cases that are best suited to me are the cases where there's some relationship issue in the workplace that is causing disruption. Those are the ones I can help people with. And
I wanted to add something in what you said about you had a friend that helped to mediate your divorce, that can be kind of tricky ground because a friend can be siding with one person over the other. They may not be objective, or a family member who attempts to mediate for a couple, even in a business dispute. So that's where an objective professional mediator can make a huge difference.
Oh, that is a very, very good point, a very important point. That is very true. I mean, he was the best we had at the time, but mm-hmm. he certainly could only take us so far. And, you know, most of the time, I mean, I even tell my clients, you know, be cautious when you leave here and you go out and discuss your divorce with, you know, the people in your support system, because they want to have your back. And somebody who wants to have your back is not really a good mediator. You know, as the mediator, my concern is what's best overall for this couple, for this family, and how can I create a plan with them so that they don't fight today, they don't fight tomorrow, and they won't fight in the future. That's my goal, not protecting one of them or the other or doing some kind of investigation. You know, whereas often a lawyer and even a therapist who sees things from, you know, one person's perspective doesn't focus on the big picture. The lawyer or the therapist is focused on the person who has hired them, you know, who they represent, who they're there to serve. And so being the mediator often puts us in a difficult position.
I also find that sometimes I am mediating as a therapist with a couple, and I have found that it's not always so good for either of them to share a lot with their closest friends, especially if it's a married couple or a long-term couple that's committed to each other and their friends are single. The friend can have an agenda to pull them away and to keep looking at what's negative, and the person may not see what's positive. So mediation is powerful.
Yes, yes.
All right. I have another question. Why do so many couples and business partners and parents and children and siblings and especially intimate partners have these conflicts?
I think that, the people who are closest to us really are the ones who have the power to hurt us. Somebody who you don't care about, somebody who's online in Publix, they may make you angry. They may leave you feeling, discounted or dismissed, which is usually the feelings that are under anger and hurt. Hurt is the big one that's under anger. But ultimately, it is those people who are closest to us, who truly have the power, I would say almost to destroy us if we let them. And that's why it is, you know, so difficult. When we really care about someone and we really, you know, long for that connection, those are the people who, if they don't give us the connection, you know, can leave us devastated.
Well,
you were
That's where your own emotional strength comes in, you know, how much you've worked on yourself to become clear so you don't take on so much from a partner.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And that's why it's critical that someone getting divorced, especially during, you know, if someone who feels rejected seeks counseling, and why the two processes definitely work together, hand in hand.
All right, so now I have two separate kind of questions, two sides of the same question. Is it ever okay to avoid conflict, and is there ever a time where conflict is positive?
Yeah, it's definitely okay to avoid conflict. If you have a conflict with someone and you have very little commitment to the relationship is unimportant, and the goal of whatever the issue at hand is unimportant, it's just best to avoid it. So, you know, why waste your time? You know, some people do, though. They have to, like, argue over everything. The reality is, why waste your time arguing or in battle with somebody if you don't really care about the relationship and you don't, and whatever it is that the argument is about is not important to you. Just, you know, we have to pick our fights in life so we can just let it go. So in those times, it definitely is okay to avoid. You know, other times avoiding can be very destructive because if people are avoiding, they're not really doing what's necessary to clear the air. Like when people tell you that they never had a fight with their spouse, that's not necessarily a good thing because it means that a lot of the air has not been cleared. And they can tell you that there was no dirty air to clear, but in reality, when human beings are that close to each other, there's always something. It's kind of impossible to not have instances where we step on each other's toes when we're that close, just because it's just impossible for two people always to have the, you know, the same outlook on everything.
But there are people living sort of parallel lives where they're together, but they're not really that close. They avoid all the important issues.
Right, and that's why avoiding is not that positive. You know, it can be positive sometimes, but that's the negative side of avoiding, is that people then start to live parallel lives. So they're living separately, maybe in the same house, you know, maybe still having some connections, but with intimacy really does involve conflict. To be truthful with someone else about where you are coming from is difficult, but it's you know, part of the process of being connected. So,
and what also happens if you avoid conflict and avoid really talking about what matters most to you, and then you're at work or somewhere else and there's another person who listens to you, you can develop erotic feelings and go have an affair because somebody else listened to you and you had that peace that you were not receiving in your relationship.
Yes, definitely. That's very, very true. I totally agree with that. Very true. Conflict can be positive.
Oh, one second. Go on.
Oh, so conflict can be positive is sort of the other piece of that question, because conflict can help us clear the air. It can, you know, give us a platform to, you know, tell our truth, which is very important in relationships. And if you may notice that even in friendships, that sometimes if you have a dispute with a friend and the two of you really do get to clear the air and talk about what's going on and explain things to each other and give voice to all the hurts that, you know, whether they be real or perceived is irrelevant, but to give voice to those hurts that have transpired between you, at the end of that conversation, you can be much better friends and you know, the trust can really be built more than if you never had the conversation.
That is so true. We think that the intimate relationship is where you have to be intimate, and we forget that friendship can be very intimate too, and we can hurt each other very much, and we can also clear the air. So what are some really important things that baby boomers need to know about conflict and conflict management?
Okay, well, the first one is that conflict is inevitable. That it, and I think we touched on this already, but that it is really a natural outgrowth of our relationship dynamics, and that conflicts can help us solve problems. Conflict can help us engage in brainstorming. It can help us improve our relationships. And it can help us lessen tension and eliminate longstanding problems. And so that's the first thing. So that conflict is inevitable. The next thing is that there really is no clear definition of conflict. But I have one. And so from my perspective, I call conflict the result of differences in perception regarding what is and what could or should be. And So then when you think about it, that means that conflict is really the result of unmet expectations. Sometimes people will talk about conflict being the result of limited resources. So if we have limited money, I want this money and you want that money, and now we have a conflict. But that's not really true, because people with limited resources, when they know how to work together, they don't have conflicts. Conflict really is about a difference in perception about what is and what could or should be. And the next time you have a conflict, it's a good idea to look at your conflict from that perspective and try to figure out what each person involved, what their idea or their perception is about what could or should be. So basically, we have three kinds of conflicts. We have task conflicts, which are often good conflicts, because those are conflicts about what we should do. And often those conflicts can be solved using brainstorming. And because if I say we should go left and you say we should go right, we might come up with a better plan if we know how to talk to each other. And we can, you know, then work it out in a more effective way. So that's a task conflict. What should we do? Then we have process conflicts. How should we do it? Which are also productive. But then we have the destructive relationship conflicts. And those are the conflicts that are guided by our egos and emotions.
Whoa.
And so under those relationship conflicts, typically someone feels dismissed, discounted, disenfranchised, or disrespected, basically devalued.
So can you suggest some strategies that people can use to deal with these conflicts, to manage them or handle them?
Yes, I can. Actually, I have 9 strategies that I talk about, and I'll give you them one at a time, and you can ask me if you
sure.
have questions about them. The first one I call the inner circle, and that's a lesson that I think we can learn from communities of faith. Often, you know, we human beings are tribal, and so it can be a real conflict management strategy to say we are all in this together. Often it means that we are going to have an external enemy, you know, who is either real or perceived on the outside, who we see as a threat or the negative. You know, you saw sometimes definitely you see this in politics also, where each political party demonizes the other. Well, that demonization is, you know, very tribal, very back to our roots, and it keeps people connected. That's part of how our political system works. I think the Republicans tend to do this better than the Democrats. So anyway, the second one is a safe space. And this is really one of the key pieces that I talk about in many different of my things that I train people on. You know, we are just animals. And when we look at animals in the animal kingdom, when they feel safe, they behave in one way. And when they feel threatened, they behave totally different. So an animal who feels threatened is going to basically fight, flight, freeze, or submit. None of those behaviors are really effective in our intimate relationships. So we want to create an intimate relationship where the space is safe, where the people involved feel so safe that they can do the opposite of fight, flight, freeze, or submit, and so that they can play, they can relax, they can leave themselves vulnerable and open.
That is so important in relationships.
Yes, it is. It is. So if you were going to say what would be the one most important aspect for a relationship to have, I really believe that aspect would be that the relationship is safe, that the people involved feel safe when they're there together. Mm. The third one I have is about shared vision and values, and along with that comes complementary skills and traits. often I'll see in my clients that it's so obvious that this marriage really was doomed from the start because they just have such a difference in values and in vision. So they're really not going in the same direction because their vision of what life should look like is totally different. And that's really an important one. Sometimes those things are really not negotiable, that all you can really do is negotiate an end to the relationship because vision and values are often, you know, they're kind of set in stone. If this is the way you think it should be and that's the way I think it should be, and, you know, if one wants to live in a cold climate and the other wants to live in a hot climate, maybe they can go back and forth. But if one wants to live on the family farm, you know, which is about really vision and what's important, and the other one wants to live, you know, in an urban area isolated, you can't really negotiate those kind of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Something else I think that's important is knowing, you and I have talked much about this, that finding somebody's motivation. And we know that this from the Daniel Pink's book, Drive. He talks about different kinds of motivation: external motivation, internal motivation, and purpose-driven motivation. And the purpose-driven motivation is much greater than money. And if we can find somebody's motivation when we're in conflict or create with them a purpose, then we can really resolve just about any conflict. So it's really important when somebody is in conflict to try to figure out what's in it for the person on the other side. If I just want you to resolve the conflict just because, well, just resolve it for me, and I'm focused on what's in it for me, I may not be getting us very far. We need to really be looking at what's in it for the person on the other side. And the most skilled and masterful negotiators, they keep in mind what they need in the back of their minds, but on the forefront, they try to figure out what's in it for the person on the other side.
And so you have clarified something, that relationships really require a negotiation process. I never liked the word compromise because I always felt that one person is giving in or both people are giving in and neither one is getting what they really want. But negotiation,
yes,
where you feel heard and you both come to terms with what makes sense for each of you, that's what works. And a lot of times we can't do it alone, and that's why a mediator or a counselor or therapist can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I'll tell you a very, very fast story. Three sisters fighting over a lemon. Each sister wants the lemon. If they were going to compromise, each sister would just get a third of the lemon. But if they can really sit down and listen to each other and hear each other, then they can come up with a plan. And in the story, it comes out perfectly because when they're able to hear each other, the sisters realize that one sister wants the lemon for the juice. The other sister wants the lemon for the rind so that she can grate it for a lemon cake. And the third sister wants the lemon for the seeds so she can plant lemon plants. And you can't get that by compromise. You can only get
that
with collaboration.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, Eleanor, we're running out of time, and I would love to hear more of those conflicts, but that was a beautiful ending, that little story. It really shows it so clearly. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. In our next episode, we will feature an interview with Mary Eileen Williams, an accomplished author whose new book can help you find a job at age 50, 60, or beyond. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond, or schedule an appointment at drericawellness.com.